It's Thursday, March 9th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about how not to suck at life, specifically how to deal with dangerous, awkward, or otherwise odd situations.
Let's do this!
So today I get to work around 9, around usual time.
Yeah, I actually rolled in around 11 since I slept through my alarm.
Awesome. So around 10, you know, the phones start resetting, which is what happens when they can't get an IP address because they're all VoIP phones. And since my computer is plugged into the phone, I lost my internet connection also. And it didn't, usually it resets once and then it comes back online, you know, because sometimes it'll hiccup and the phones are real sensitive.
Yeah.
So it didn't come back on and the phones kept resetting and resetting and resetting. So I used my cell phone, which is the only communication device I had at all that would work, and called my boss and I said, hey, can you go to the Optum Online website and tell me the system status? And he says, there's a major outage, go home. And I'm like, I drove an hour to get here, and I've been here an hour. Why would I drive an hour to get home now? That's just silly.
Well, it depends. What if there was nothing out there to do? I'd just drive home immediately.
Well, yeah, but my parents' house was like 30 minutes away, so I went there. So I called my mom, and she was home, so hey, why not?
Hey, you should have gone to Stu Leonard's.
Maybe.
Yeah.
On the way home, yeah.
Yeah, we still have croutons, though. It's all good.
Yeah, I went to Stop and Shop, and I got some good food there. We'll see if it, you know, tastes good. I got some new things there. And, you know.
So that story didn't go anywhere.
You know, stuff happened. Here's the end of the story. I got an email that says, yeah, the internet's not going to be up there tomorrow either. Don't go to work tomorrow. So I might finish that theme tomorrow, everybody.
Hey, at least they warned you.
Yep.
This weekend we're doing a bunch of stuff. We're going to do the theme, hopefully. We're going to do Libsyn, hopefully.
Awesome. Gonna get all that crap done for all you peoples, and for us peoples. Maybe I'll rearrange the furniture in my room also.
Yeah, I'm sure they all just care about that.
Yeah.
So in the news, IBM, now they've been doing a lot of outsourcing, and a lot of companies have been outsourcing, mostly to India, but also to Vietnam and Russia and various places. Now, IBM is doing something that hasn't been done often, and they're doing it very much so. They're outsourcing high-level jobs as opposed to low-level jobs. So normally when you hear about outsourcing, you think, you know, all right, they're outsourcing tech support or phone calls, like phone data centers or whatever, or maybe chip manufacturing. No, they're outsourcing actual solutions development to Bangalore, India.
All right. Well, those Indian people are smart. They know what they're doing, kind of.
Exactly. That's the thing. A lot of people in this country seem to be very unafraid of outsourcing because they say, oh, no one can do the job I do. Ha ha, I'm a smart American. And nah, that's really not the case. You're not special.
Those other people are smarter and they'll be willing to get paid less.
They're also more determined.
Yeah, so your choices are pretty much beat them in terms of how much you're willing to be paid and, you know, your quality of life and such, or be unemployed when they take your job.
See, I'm very glad that I'm in IT because the stuff I do is actually very difficult to outsource because I physically do things.
Yeah, I don't seem to have problems getting a job either. I mean,
oh, yeah. Well, honestly, I got 3 job offers in the past week, and all of them are very enticing.
Yeah, when I had my resume up, I got a whole bunch. You know, it's just a lot of them were kind of like I didn't want to do them as opposed to they didn't want me, you know. And then I finally picked one, and I got it. And maybe a little while from now, I'll go find another one.
Yeah. But IBM already has almost 40,000 workers in India, and they're going to be expanding that greatly. And I find it interesting that they claim they're not going to fire anyone over this. They're going to, you know, business speak, realign their watchits and inward-facing blah, blah, blah. But they're going to repurpose all of the facilities that otherwise would be closed down that used to do what they're shipping off to India.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how long that'll last.
Yeah, then there'll be this layoff that's completely unrelated to those outsources.
But that'll be at least years down the road. I do know that IBM, despite all of its problems, is very good about when something's going to be shut down, they give everyone who works for them time to at least find other jobs.
Well, yeah. And if you can't find another job, then you probably deserve to be laid off anyway because you're worthless.
Yeah, I mean, I used to think that the IT industry was really in a rut, but not so much. I mean, I'm really not kidding. I've gotten not just like, oh, let's interview this person, but hey, do you want a job? Many of them like, people call me constantly now because I put my resume up online a few weeks ago, and they just keep offering me more and more money for various jobs all over the place.
Well,
because
I think what happened is in the early 90s, when there was an explosion, there was all of a sudden this huge demand for information and IT and CS workers and such. And they fulfilled that demand by hiring, you know, people who were like high school kids and stuff and everything. It was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, when we were in high school, you could get a job making web pages if you knew basic HTML, and they'd pay you $10-$20 an hour.
Yeah, those are crazy times. Crazy times.
For any of you who missed the dot-com boom, it was an awesome time to be alive, and I'm glad that I was not in the industry when it crashed.
I am also glad. Anyway, but after that, you know, it's like all of a sudden all these people who are CS and IT majors started graduating from school, and people started taking CS and IT as their major because there was big money in it.
So now there's companies.
And then all the companies went out of business, so the demand decreased and the supply increased. But now we have this increasing demand still for real IT and CS jobs and not companies that are going to disappear tomorrow.
Yeah, and there's a lot of companies that have people already who don't really have the skills the company needs.
And all those IT and CS graduates that, you know, took it for the money aren't really smart and they don't really know what they're doing.
Granted, I took it just for the money, but this stuff isn't that complicated if you actually paid attention at all.
Yeah, and, you know, it was like in CS, you could always tell the people who knew what was going on. It was like two levels of programmers. There are people who did the CS work as work, and they didn't care about computers or CS at all outside of their schoolwork. Those people didn't really make it. They got lame jobs. The people who code and, you know, coded before they got to school, coded things in their spare time, and continued to code their own things after graduating, those are the people that are worth something, like me.
Yeah, IT is much broader because the skill base is very varied, and it really depends on where you're working and what you're doing.
Well, this is a very varied skill base for CS.
Oh, yeah.
It's different.
But, yeah, IT is very different from CS in that, really, people skills and just being generally smart matter a lot more than knowing about specific tech, because anytime you change jobs, every company uses completely different tech. You're going to have to learn it all over again anyway. But as long as you know the base, like if you know TCP/IP, you can deal with whatever crap they throw at you networking-wise.
Yep. Yeah, CS is sort of the same way. If you know object-oriented programming, you can do whatever language they want. The thing is, people don't know how to hire CS people. You know, that's one thing that Joel on Software always writes about, is how to hire programmers.
Now, actually, there seems to be a very large market growing in companies or people who know how to hire people, and they offer their services to companies to find them people, so the HR people don't hire someone stupid.
The thing is that those people themselves are good workers that are now getting paid to essentially not do work that they should be hired to do, and that, you know.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's all well and good to care about your job, but I work mostly because they pay me, and I use the fact that I am paid to fund all of my other fun things like podcasting or anime conventions or real life.
Yeah, I work for the money, but also I would not do a job if it was not if it was extremely painful to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, being stung by bees in the eye, that's not the most fun job, and it is rather painful.
I meant, like, you know, a job I didn't like.
I've liked almost no job I've ever had.
Like, if they paid me my current salary, even if they paid me double my current salary, if my job was, like, filing papers in a cubicle or something,
I wouldn't do it. If someone paid me double my current salary, I'd do whatever they asked, and then I just quit after a few years with a pile of money.
No, I wouldn't do it. It's not worth my time to do something that's so unpleasant no matter what I'm paid. Well, not no matter what I'm paid. They could pay me so much that I would only have to do it for like a week or two and then I could quit.
No, your example, double your salary. If I was making six figures and all I had to do was file papers, that's great. I'd do it for 2 years. Then I have a giant pile of money. I'd quit and I'd go do something fun.
No, because if I was getting paid six figures and I was filing papers, after like a month, I would just want to kill myself, and it wouldn't be worth the money. Just the immense pain of filing papers all day, every day.
See, I don't find it painful. To me, the 8 hours I spend at work is lost no matter what, so I really don't care what I'm doing. If I work for a company, they're buying my time, and I will give them my time, and I'll do whatever they ask me of me in that time. And other than that, I really don't care.
See, that time's not lost to me. My entire goal in life is to get back as much of that time as possible while still getting enough money.
Yeah, the best way to get that back is to become rich and not have to work.
Well, there's one way, but the other way is to do work that isn't a loss of time.
Yeah, well, I don't think I could ever have a job in technology that I wouldn't consider a loss of time.
I think I could.
Yeah, well, coding's very different. Coding, you create things. IT, you maintain things.
I maintain things that are already created.
Yeah, you also create new things. I don't create anything, other than maybe a bash script here or there. Anyway, we've gone off on a long tangent. The point is, IBM is outsourcing. This isn't even technology. This is like solutions development stuff. But high-level work that they're just outsourcing to India because there's no reason to keep it here in the U.S.
Suck. For some people.
Yep.
Hooray for some other people.
Globalism.
Mm-mm. Actually, President Bush had a recent comment about outsourcing that was actually uncharacteristically intelligent.
Yeah, his speechwriter must have gotten a raise or something.
Yeah, what he said, he was talking about outsourcing to India, and he said, yeah, it's a natural economic thing. It's going to happen. What are you going to do about it? All right, whatever you think about that, I don't care. The next thing he said was, you know, maybe you American people should think about making things to sell to all those middle-class people in India. And I was like, yeah, maybe we should.
Except no one wants to make anything here. No one wants a factory in their town.
Just because you don't want one, at least Bush is at least willing to say, that's bad medicine. You need it.
Honestly, I don't think he really paid attention to what he was saying. I'm pretty sure that was a speechwriter and some aides.
Could be, but he did say it. Whether he meant it or knew it or not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He said it, so we'll go by it. All right, so in the other news, Hillary Clinton, our senator, and Joe Lieberman, my former senator, not the greatest senators in the world, but not the worst, but whatever.
I don't consider very many senators at all to be anywhere near great.
Yeah, Obama's good.
Yeah, he's not great. He's good, but he hasn't done anything amazing.
Nope. Anyway, these two people have been notorious for anti-video gaming actions. And just today, they passed a bill. They didn't pass the bill into law. They passed it out of the committee into the Senate. And it is the Children and Media Research Advancement Act, the CAMRA.
Now, isn't this the law that's just supposed to put money so the CDC will investigate the effects of games on kids?
That is the major... The law does a lot of things, but the number one thing it does is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention is going to do a major study. Basically, they agreed to give them $90 million to create evidence that shows that video games make violence and such and such and such.
Now, the thing is, if they actually do science... These studies could show that video games don't do anything.
Yep. The problem is, will they do science or will they just do basically what, you know, happens when Microsoft pays someone to do a study?
Well, the thing is,
just give Microsoft the answer they want.
Lieberman is very devoted to this cause. Hillary, however, I really think that the only reason she even is ever anywhere near this issue is simply because it gives her a way to look good in front of various soccer mom types or other conservatives.
Maybe. Who knows? We don't know them, but...
Because most of her other ideas and policies are generally very good, and...
Well, most of Joe Lieberman's other ideas are generally very good. I'd say he's about 80% good.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, I can't tell, and there's no way to know, but maybe we should go ask the CDC what they're going to do. And why is it the CDC that's doing this study?
The Centers for Disease Control, one of the main things they do is they research possible threats to the health and well-being of Americans.
Yeah, but I don't know if this really falls into a disease category.
But if it has physiological or psychological effects, then it definitely does.
Well, it says here that the advocacy group Citizens Against Government Waste, I'm for that, I'm against government waste.
Careful, the way the government works is that any time there's something named something, it's actually rooting for the exact opposite.
You mean how the Constitution Party wants to destroy the Constitution?
Or how the Federalist Party was anti-Federalist and the anti-Federalists were actually Federalists?
Yep, anyway, they deemed Lieberman the porker of the month, criticizing him for spending taxpayer money on redundant studies already undertaken by groups like the Kaiser Family Foundation and the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Huh.
So, you know, knowing that, that lends a little bit more credence to the point that this study is them trying to buy a study that gives them the result they want, as opposed to a study that desperately needs to be done because it's already being done.
It's probably a lot like the porn stuff that the government's been doing lately against Google, where they want to subpoena all their search results so they can see how much porn is out there.
Perhaps. I just don't like the whole thing. The government really shouldn't... You know, because The simple fact is they shouldn't be legislating it no matter what the result of the study is because of freedom of speech. Therefore, they shouldn't be doing the study in the first place.
Well, no, if it were actual science, if the government was just paying scientists to study various things, I'd be all for a study because it would add to the general knowledge base of the human race.
Yeah, but they're not doing it study.
That's the
they're trying to manufacture evidence.
See, that's the problem. The government should be paying for research. The government shouldn't be paying scientists to make up the research for them.
And also, if the government is going to pay for research, they should not do so much redundant research. They should go for, something better to be studying than this. That's not getting
money.
Well,
that's just because it gets decided by committee instead of by scientists.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
So, we've been wanting a griddle in our kitchen for a long time. Mostly because we watched the hibachi guy use his giant hot metal plate to make awesome hibachi food for us, and we can't really do it in our kitchen.
I know, it's like all the easy and great foods that we could cook quickly that would taste great for dinner require a hot, very hot, very flat piece of metal. And we have these coily electric things, and it's not so good.
Yeah, the heat's not that even. Not only that, but even breakfast. You know, making pancakes on something like that is so much easier than using some sort of pan.
Yep.
But anyway, there's a company out there that has just marketed and made a anti-griddle. It's a griddle, but instead of heating, it freezes. It gets down to negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's cold.
Fahrenheit. That's like negative 30.
Woman!
That's like negative 34 Celsius.
Wow, you could like make ice cream on that or something.
The main uses they seem to talk about are, say you make some sort of creamy, pudding type thing. You can put it on this thing, shape it into a shape, and then take it off right away. And it'll be frozen and crunchy on the outside, but cool and creamy on the inside.
I see these being utilized heavily in the next pastry championship.
I just hope we see more of these around, because I gotta say, I like the Cold Stone Creamery a lot, and there aren't any around here.
It's just ice cream to me, but...
You ever eaten at one?
It's ice cream.
Yeah, it's ice cream like Subway, where you pick what you want in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think this is cool.
I think it's cool, but I don't know how much we would actually use one.
Oh, we wouldn't use one. It's like $800.
Even if it was as much as a George Foreman grill, how much would we use it?
The only reason we wouldn't is because we don't have the skill to make the things that would go on it in the first place.
There you go. It's like I have a blender. I barely use the blender. Maybe I should use it more. In the summer, I'll use it more.
In the summer, let's make milkshakes every day.
No, not every day.
Why not?
We'll get fat.
No, we won't.
Yeah,
we
will. Anyway.
I won't.
So I found another thing on Craigslist. This is akin to the... Hey, crackhead, with the guy with the spark plugs getting stolen. This is in the same category. And, oh my God, our podcast isn't marked explicit, but this is, like, beyond explicit. And I'm going to read it.
Yeah, the next few minutes are going to be explicit.
So, the introduction, let me read this. It's from a social worker. And the social worker is obviously having a hard time with terrible, terrible people. And this is what he says. I don't even know if it's a he or she. After years of idealism, I finally decided I'm sick and fucking tired of helping the disenfranchised and oppressed. I have a master's degree in social work, and I've worked in a number of different settings. I've been a social worker for Children's Protective Services, a therapist on a psych ward, and I've worked as a case manager for a nonprofit that shall remain nameless. I've had a number of clients over the years that I would now like to thank for helping me come to the realization that certain people are beyond help. He then goes on to describe six very specific terrible, terrible, terrible people.
Now, we don't need to read these on the air here.
Well, let me give you a taste of just one of these six.
Yes, and if you're interested, read the rest. This isn't as fun. Like, the medical thread we talked about a while ago was hilarious. This is less hilarious and more horrifying.
Yeah. So, the crackhead mother with 27 cats. Obviously, she has...
toxoplasmosis.
Exactly. I called you in advance to set up our appointment. You knew I was going to be at your house that day and that I would be evaluating your progress in making your home habitable so that your kids would be returned to you. So why, oh why, did you answer the door with a crack pipe in your hand? Oh, it's not yours. You were just holding on to it for your neighbor. Sure, I'll buy that. Let me ask you something, though. Are those your neighbor's cat turds overflowing in the kitchen sink? No, you're right. Those litter boxes are expensive. Perhaps you should consider getting rid of a few of the cats so there'll be room for your children. Just a thought. By the way, is that your neighbor's blood coagulating over there on the couch?
God.
Yeah, so there's five more of those. And at the end, he said, I don't know if it's a he still. He says, okay, I feel much better now. I think I might go back to school for an MBA or something. I'm tired of working to help these people for 60 hours a week at $35,000 a year. I don't blame this guy, but I don't know what to do about these people. And it's really tough.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a show on it someday because we had a debate about this just before the show.
A debate where neither of us knew what to do.
Yeah, I mean, we're very opinionated, but when it comes down to these types of people, I mean, I guess these types of people sounds bad, but the types of people that you'll read about if you read Scott's Thing of the Day, I don't know what to do.
It's like I'm against killing and I'm against, you know, hurting them and... jail or rehab won't really fix them because they're just such terrible, terrible people. You can't help them, but at the same time, you don't want to let them go on hurting society. But you don't want to kill them because that's wrong. So what do you do?
Yeah, you can't exile them because that just hurts them and someone else now.
Yeah, there's no right answer. I mean, you know, if you can decide that killing is okay, if you somehow decide that, I don't know how you could.
Yeah, and if you can, watch Trigun. It might change your mind a little.
Yeah. But if you can't decide that, you just kind of have to figure out what hurts society the least without being evil.
Yeah, so we'll do a show on that someday so you can hear all of our varied opinions about it.
Yeah, but wow, I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, today, the final day of our first theme week, How to Not Suck Week.
Woohoo!
Yeah, we'll pick a better theme another time.
I know a way how not to suck. Don't put anything in your mouth and apply suction.
Yeah, Scott's been making that joke all week, and he's been waiting for the opportunity to say it on the air, so there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's obvious.
So today, we came up with a lot of ideas, and a lot of them we wanted to save, or we'd already done, and we'd forgotten.
Yeah, can you imagine? We haven't even done 100 episodes, and already we forgot some of the episodes we did. I had to go search in our own archives to see if we had talked about money.
Though I note that unlike Slashdot, we don't have dupes because we actually do search through our archives to make sure we haven't done something already.
Gas. Actually, Slashdot hasn't had so many dupes lately. I think they've been improving because now Dig is putting the pressure on.
It is. Though Dig doesn't quite have the quality of comments yet.
No, but they have this comment system that I'm beginning to think is challenging Slashdot's system pretty well. You know?
But anyway, today we decided that we're going to do, very simply, How to Not Suck Under Pressure.
What we're going to do is we're going to go through some situations that are pretty tough that most people would freak out in or mess up or do something stupid in. And we're going to tell you how not to do something stupid.
And then at the end, we're going to go through some generic advice on, you know, what did you learn from all these situations?
What did you learn?
Because basically, both of us have been in a lot of very difficult, dangerous, or otherwise frightening situations. And we've noticed that most people, when confronted with a dangerous or unexpected situation, I don't want to say don't deal with it properly, but just don't deal with it at all.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, physically dangerous things, like you're in a store and a guy comes in with a gun. It's like, you know, emotional, personal situations where someone's freaking out or, you know, people are in a fight or someone's really, really mad or, you know, something like that. Those actually happen more often. It's much more useful advice to figure out how to deal with those than to deal with the rare occurrences of crazy violence or a giant fire or something like that.
All right, so let's start off with something real, real light. Let's say you're at someone's house, you're staying over, and you accidentally break something.
Well, number one, don't try to hide it. Admit you broke it.
Yeah, don't be Peter from the Family Guy.
If you broke it because if it was your fault that it broke, like you bumped into something and it fell or whatever, admit you did it, apologize, and what's the word? Compensate?
Yes. Now, we know specifically that many people don't do this because back when we lived in Colony, you know, at RIT, we had a bunch of eggs in our fridge and we had a bunch of friends over. And then all the friends went home, and we opened the fridge, and all the eggs are broken. It looks like someone knocked it out of the fridge, and there was egg matter on the ground outside the fridge, and there's a big mess.
Yeah, so we don't know who did it.
To this day, we don't know, and no one ever admitted to it.
But consider this. If we found out who did it, we would have freaking been pissed off at them and maybe hurt them or something. But if someone would have just said, I broke the eggs and cleaned it up and threw them out, whatever, we wouldn't care. It's just $2 worth of eggs. It's the hiding it and trying to be all sneaky that, you know, will get the heat put on you. So don't try to be all sneaky.
All right. Let's say you're driving your car and someone hits your car.
Number one, stop.
Yeah, someone actually hit my car when we were driving back from Otakon this previous year.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
So I think we're still in Jersey.
But only his
point.
Car was damaged.
Yeah, so, but basically we're on the freeway, and I-95, for any of you who've ever driven on it, at the end of any weekend, especially in the summer, it basically becomes an unmoving block of traffic. So we're driving on it, and I'm going along, you know, maybe 45, 50, because you can't go so fast. And we come up over the crest of a hill, and there's a car stopped ahead of us, so I slow down and come to a stop. Guy coming up behind me doesn't even seem to notice that the cars ahead of him are at a dead stop, doesn't even slow down until he's about 10 feet away from the back of my car. I see him slam on the brakes, car's skidding back and forth, he barely misses my car, he hits my rearview mirror with his side rearview mirror. His shatters in a shower of glass, mine is undamaged.
Those things are expensive, the side mirrors.
So I roll down my window, because now he's basically sitting next to us since traffic isn't moving. And I say, hey, let's pull over, insurance, blah. And he flicks me off, yells, it's your fault for stopping, man, and drives off, like on the shoulder.
Great.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is, in a situation like that, there's not really much you can do because the guy's running away. But write down his license plate and,
which I did. And two, call the police, which I also did.
Yeah.
I never heard back what happened to him, but I filed a police report with the... Yeah, it was New Jersey because that's where I filed the report.
Yep. Just, don't let it go if someone's that stupid.
Now, this goes for crime in general because it seems that whenever, a crime is happening, a lot of times everyone thinks, oh, it's not my responsibility. Someone else will deal with it. Someone else already called 911. It's not my problem.
Yeah, when I see, something happening, I call 911, even if I see people on the phone who are 99% probably calling 911.
Yeah, like when we saw that horrible car fire.
Yeah, we were driving down the highway, and on the other side of the highway is this car, and it was on fire.
Like, wow. It was a giant fireball. Like, if anyone was inside that car, they were dead.
Totally dead. There might have been dead people in it. We don't know.
Yeah, because there was no one standing around it.
There was one person
standing. Oh, yeah, there was that one guy. Like, it was a kind of fat guy in a white shirt, but...
I don't even remember who it was. It was just a person.
Yeah, but there was no one else around, and this car was engulfed in flames.
It was like this giant window. Fire was coming out of every window, it was a giant pillar of black smoke going straight up. I'm surprised. Maybe the gas tank had already exploded or was about to, but we saw this smoke pillar coming around the corner.
For miles. We're driving. We're like, what's that smoke? Wow,
yeah.
What the hell's that? And finally we get there, and oh, car's on fire.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Now, what was funny is that there was a cop... like a half a mile back on the road pulling someone over for speeding who had no idea.
Yeah, but I'm sure he found out pretty quick.
Yeah, so of course we called 911 and the 911 operator says, wait a minute, is it on blah 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 and blah blah blah? And we're like, yeah, that sounds right. And they said, yeah, we know about it.
All right.
But we called because a lot of times you'd be surprised how many times someone needs help and no one bothers to stop or call. They all assume someone else will do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are even studies, FARC had an article recently about it, where they've shown that the more people are present at an accident or a dangerous situation, the less likely it is that anyone will call for help.
Yeah, because everyone thinks someone else did it.
Yeah, so you know what? Do it, because you're that someone else to everyone else.
Yeah, do it no matter what. If there's anything that requires 911 ever, always call it, even if someone is saying they called it already.
And if you're driving to work and you're the only other car on the road and you see an accident, don't just keep going. Stop. Make sure they're okay. Call the police.
Yeah, if the police aren't there yet, and you can do something about it, do something about it.
In fact, some states...
At the very minimum, keep driving, but call 911 and say, hey, I just passed an accident.
In fact, some states have laws. I don't know exactly which states. They're called Good Samaritan laws, and some of these laws protect you if you try to help someone.
Yeah, so, it's like if you try to help someone, but you actually end up doing something bad, it's okay because you were trying to do good. You're not going to get in trouble if you screw up.
But some of these other laws state such things as if you are the first person to come across an accident and you don't stop and try to help, or at least stop and notify the authorities, you can go to jail or get a ticket or whatever the fines may be.
Yeah. Because I guess by doing that, you're just delaying, how long it takes until the accident is handled and you're actually hurting people, by your, you're not really hurting them, but You know, your inaction is causing greater harm when you could have prevented harm. One other thing I learned in Red Cross training is that let's say someone next to you has a heart attack, right? And you're going to do CPR on them, or you're going to use a defibrillator or something like that, right? You can't call 911 because you're doing that. What you do is you need to point at someone. You need to say, you call 911. You can't just say, someone call 911, because nobody will. You need to point at someone and say, you do it. And then watch them and make sure they do it.
Yep. That applies to basically any dangerous situation. If you're going to take charge, take charge. If you kind of half-assedly, you know, like you start to do something, but you don't say, or you're not very authoritative, nothing's going to happen.
You need to say, you do this, you do that, you do this, and I'm going to do this. Go, go, go.
Yeah, don't wait for someone else to do that.
Mm-hmm. Because if you wait around for someone else to do that, you're pretty much going to wait for the police. And I think it's been shown in many, many studies that the number one factor in saving lives and such is response time. So if you can do anything, you know, that is beneficial, no matter how small it is, the fact that you're doing it sooner is
yep.
very helpful.
Especially when it comes to CPR and other forms of resuscitation. When in doubt, even poorly done CPR is better than no CPR in most cases, if someone actually had a heart attack or isn't breathing.
Yeah, and I mean, the Heimlich maneuver, I mean, even if you don't go for CPR training, you should know how to save a person who's choking on something.
In fact, I'd just say as a general corollary, how to not suck under pressure. In general, I think everyone who doesn't have a reason not to should learn basic CPR and, you know, basic Heimlich, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, the Red Cross gives little thingies you can go get training.
Now, you can read a website that'll give you the basic idea of it pretty handily.
Yeah, that too. But, you know, the Red Cross training, you get the little card and stuff. It's cool.
Yeah.
I have a little card.
Oh, I don't have the card. I did it in, like, middle school and with the Cub Scouts.
All right, let's go back to some less dangerous personal type situations.
All right.
Let's say you're hanging out, and two people start yelling at each other and fighting.
We've had that happen often.
Yep, I think that's the number one most occurrence that happens.
Now, whenever this happens, what I usually observe is that everyone who's not involved just sits there and like pretends it isn't happening.
You know, that's not what I observe. I observe when it seems like there's different levels. Like when people are grr at each other, right? But they're not confronting directly. People just seem to not talk about it, try to stay, you know, try to distract, you know, obfuscate, you know, and keep the people apart from each other. If people are standing there yelling at each other, right, people will just kind of watch like, ooh, what's going to happen? Ooh, everyone will start paying attention to it instead of trying to obfuscate. As soon as it comes to blows, people go in and grab them and pull them apart. It's like, no, you're not fighting. You know, that's what I've seen.
Well, I guess it depends on what type. I mean, is it two strangers? Is it, you know, a group of friends and two people are angry at each other? Is it some drunks outside of a club?
Man, if I walk, no matter what, if I see, you know, well, two drunks outside of a club might be an exception. But if I see two people, like, fighting an angry fight, like, you know, trying to hurt each other, and they don't have deadly weapons, I'm going to freaking try to break it up.
Well, see, I would stay leery just because you don't know what they're fighting about or whose side you should be on.
No, you'd be on. They're fighting. The fact people shouldn't be fighting no matter what. So you don't care whose side you're on. You don't.
All right. But here's my point. My cynical point. What if it's two stupid people fighting over something stupid? Letting them fight is probably the best societal outcome.
No, it's not. Beating them both up separately is the best societal outcome.
Stupid people often tend to be fairly strong.
Sometimes. Here's a slightly related example of fighting. When I was walking down the street and there was a purse snatcher on the other side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
I talked about this in the podcast the day it happened.
Yep, it actually gave me a little bit of faith in humanity that maybe there's a lot of people out there who don't suck quite so badly.
Yeah, he's a purse snatcher. So people tried to catch him, and of course, a fight broke out. And of course, people ganged up on him and, you know, got him. You know, you don't want to. There's sometimes when you gotta fight, and sometimes when you break up fights.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in general, at least far as I'm concerned, I'll often take risks if I think that the risks are appropriate to help people. And if you won't take the risks, that's fine. But bear in mind that if no one takes the risk, often someone's going to get hurt.
Yep. Another thing is, if you see a fight about to happen, you can sometimes do something to stop it before you have to pull people apart. Like, if you see an angry guy running down the street, he's going to hit someone. You know, you can maybe stand in his way or knock him over. He won't see you coming because he's looking at the guy he's going to hit.
Or if two drunk punk kids are about to fight outside of a club, just walk over and calmly say, all right, guys, neither one of you wants to get arrested. And someone already called the cops. So we'd best all get out of here.
Yep.
You know, if you have the gift of gab at all, you can very easily defuse bad situations like that. Now, back when I was in high school, I was involved in a fairly interesting situation along these lines. And I'll just tell the story and how I reacted to it, because I think it's a decent lesson in how to react to this sort of thing.
All right.
So I had a friend who was, she's a good person, but she's a little unstable, I guess. And to make a long story short, and to not mention any names, she called me one day, you know, early mid-evening, needing a ride to her boyfriend's house. And I wondered what was up, and I heard yelling in the background, but I was bored, and I figured this could only be interesting. So I drive over to her house, and I pick her up, and I drive her over to his house, and I park, and she runs out of my car and runs up to his front door. Okay. A large woman, probably her boyfriend's mom, since we're all in high school, answers the door. And then the boyfriend comes out, and there's a giant screaming, shouting, horrible mess of a rigmarole. And
rigmarole.
Yeah, I've said that word a lot lately. And I probably would have walked out to see what was going on, but it ended before I could even really leave my car. And basically, from what I gathered later, the guy had broken up with her, and she was not too happy with this. She immediately tried to throw herself in front of traffic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I bolted from my car and I tackled her. And at this point, the people in the house had, like, closed the door and they wanted nothing to do with it at this point. So I grabbed her. I put her in my car and I had a... My car didn't have child locks, but my laser's locks are actually broken. So I basically locked her in the passenger side of my car. And then I pulled out my cell phone. And I didn't call the police or anything right away, but I called another friend so I'd have another body to, you know, help deal with all this. And basically, to make a long, long, long story short, we ended up calling a hospital and taking care of the situation.
Hospital's good.
Yeah. And she, from what I've heard, she's doing okay now. But basically, here's a bad situation. A girl is trying to kill herself by throwing herself onto a freeway with her car coming. Now, I tackled her, and I can't think of any other way to resolve that situation. I can't think of anything else I could have done.
There really isn't much you could do.
No, other than, you know, just sit there and not care.
You could drive your car out in front of traffic in front of her, but then you're kind of like...
I think that could have just made the situation worse.
Yeah, you could have hit her with your car to, like, break her leg, that way, and then that way she'd learn her lesson, and then you just drag her to the side of the road.
Yeah. Now, the thing
is... I don't know. There's not much else you can do.
Though I guess the examples I can make here are that when you're in a situation like this, you have to think and you have to keep a clear head. I mean, if I just stood there going, oh my God, she probably would have been hit by a car.
Probably.
And two, you have to think about a lot of things, just in general, and you won't be able to think unless you have a clear head. So I finally get her in my car, and the whole time I'm watching because there was a way to unlock the door, and I had to drive her somewhere so we could deal with her. And I was very keenly aware of the fact that there's a decent chance she'll try to fling herself out of my car at some point.
Yep.
So I was prepared for that.
Should have put her in the trunk.
It was a freaking laser.
It has a trunk.
You can't put a person in the trunk.
The back seat, at least.
All right. Have you ever seen a laser?
It has a tiny back seat.
All right. I couldn't fit in the back seat. I could not sit back there. There was no way I was going to shove her back there because she was resisting me. She was still trying to throw herself in front of traffic the whole time.
Great. Yeah, that's pretty much the number one piece of advice at all is don't go crazy and just start doing stuff reflexively or, you know, don't use your penis brain. Don't use any other brain except the one in your head and keep it in control.
Just think logically.
Yeah, I mean... Think about this. The purpose of seatbelts in a car isn't so much to keep you from flying out the window, although it does have that effect. It's to keep the driver in the driver's seat in control. It's a safety mechanism which keeps the brain behind the vehicle, behind the wheel.
I see the analogy you're making, and it's a good one.
Yes. That is the number one thing. No matter what the situation is, no matter how crazy, keep the brain behind the wheel.
Now, case in point, here's a nice quick example. Say you're in a nightclub. And a fire breaks out, like a sudden flash fire, and it's a crowd. Now, half the crowd is probably going to freak out and start screaming and running for the exit and creating a big mess. The first thing you need to do is, one, get away from the fire. Two, get away from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Don't follow the crowd. Don't scream and run. Just think and look for a way out that doesn't involve the crowd and just walk slowly toward it.
Also, check for fire extinguishers, fire alarms. you know your exit paths.
But think these things. If you're not clear in the head, there's no way you're going to think of all that. You'll be crushed by the masses trying to get out the door.
If this smoke, get low. If this fire, stop, drop, and roll. You know, this is first grade stuff, kiddies. Stop, drop, and roll.
But adults, no one in the world seems to be able to actually deal with this sort of thing. When there's ever an actual disaster, like, look at New Orleans. It was just an unmitigated disaster. And not counting all the federal mistakes and, you know, the various issues surrounding New Orleans, the fact remains that everyone assumed that the government and other people were going to take care of them, and they did not work, at least many people did not work to take care of themselves.
Yep. And
don't rely on other people to save you, because they often will not get there in time.
Yeah, and while on the one hand, these people do have some sort of a, you know, a complaint that, hey, the government said it would do this and it didn't do it. True. On the other hand, if they're not going to do it, you can't complain so much if you don't do anything to help yourself at all. You know, I mean, if you did everything you could and then it's still, you were still stuck, and then someone said they would help you and they didn't, then you could have a real complaint. But if you're, you know, just not doing anything and expecting someone else to save you, I really don't have any pity.
Now, even on a small scale, just anything that happens to you, don't expect anyone else to just march in and save you. You'll often have to deal with the situation on your own. And if you wait for the police to arrive, or you wait for the fire department to arrive, things may just get worse on the interim.
Mm-hmm. And I notice a lot of people either just, when things are going to happen to them, they either just let the things happen and then feel bad for themselves that their life sucks, and then their life begins to suck because they let bad things happen to them. Or they, you know, try to get other people to do things about it. And then, sure, they avert a lot of trouble, but then they end up as people who can't really do anything. And they're always relying on others. And then eventually they get into a trap, and then they're like, oh my God!
Now, to back away from disaster talk a bit, in addition to keeping a clear head, take action. If there's a situation and you can affect it, and you think that affecting it or changing it will alter the outcome in a positive way, act. Now, this may seem stupid, but most people just don't act.
You know, they act by reflex.
Yep.
You know, you might have the clear head and you might be thinking of the right thing to do. Like, you know, the best thing for me to do is to walk right out of that exit over there. But your body is still running like a crazy nut. Don't do that. Because then all your effort of clear-headedness has gone to waste.
Now, a nice non-threatening example. Let's say you're living with someone and they do something you don't like. Maybe they don't do the dishes, or they're passive-aggressive weird and they bother you, or they leave their toenail clippings out.
Great examples from real life.
Yeah, not between the two of us, but mostly from other people we know. But anyway, now, if you don't confront them about this situation, you really have no complaint you can make.
Yeah, I mean, let's say Rim has a problem with leaving his dirty clothes all around the house.
Yeah, like underwear just on the ceiling.
Yeah. Now, if I don't say anything like, hey, can you stop leaving your underwear on the ceiling? And one day there's like a crazy fight and I'm like, oh, you always leave your underwear on the ceiling. I really can't say that because I didn't tell him to stop. Yeah. How is he supposed to know?
We know a lot of people who are just very passive aggressive out there. And instead of confronting a situation, they'll just get angrier and angrier. And they expect everyone else to know that they're angry.
It's much easier to just, you know, sometimes tell a person, hey, can you do this? Hey, can you do this? Than to all at once go, oh my God, you're terrible.
I mean, I guess to put it succinctly, nip problems in the bud, to quote the late and great Barney Fife.
Mm-hmm.
If a situation is bad, stop it before it gets worse. If you have a little fire on your desk, put it out now. Don't wait until your whole desk is on fire.
Yeah.
You know, stitch in time saves nine.
Mm-hmm.
I could just keep saying things like that all night.
Yeah. Another thing to keep in mind is you want to not be a wuss.
Yeah, now that may sound very generic, but it's very true.
I mean, you might think of the right thing to do. You might, you know exactly, you might get the action ready, but then you wuss out because you're afraid of something.
Yeah, have you ever been in like a crowd situation?
When you know you're right and when you know your course of action is a good one.
Or you know, like, all right, that's what they should do to fix this. And then you just stand there and wait for them to do it.
Or you tell someone, you know, let's go back to the previous example. You tell someone, hey, stop leaving your underwear around the house. And they don't stop. Don't let it go. You know, you just let it go because you're too wussy to do something about it.
In other words, be that guy. You know how whenever the situation, normally you don't want to be that guy, but in this case, you want to be that guy. If no one's taking charge, be the guy who takes charge. Actually, at KatsuCon, there's a little example. One of the announcers on stage was talking about, he was making an announcement about how two panels were switched, the Utena panel and the Club Summit panel. And he didn't remember the name of the second panel. So he's up there, he says, the Utena panel and the, I don't have a, and he just starts floundering. And no one's, like, making a move to tell him what it is, and he's not making a move to find out. So I just shouted out, the Club Summit panel! And he looks, he's like, oh, thanks, and then the show kept going. Mm-hmm. You want to be that guy. The guy who everyone thinks, oh, he fixed it.
Mm-hmm. No matter what you think, you know, bad will happen to you, the consequences of whatever, you know, the damage for your bravery might be, or the risk, because that's what bravery is. It's risk-taking to achieve something good. You know, the more risk you take, the braver you are. And whatever that risk is, it's probably worse than just letting the bad thing happen. You know? Or equal.
I mean, I guess to have another relevant old saying, fortune favors the bold. If you live your life actively and you take an active role in the situations that can affect you, you can alter their outcome. If you live your life passively and you passively accept what life gives you, you're never going to get anything beyond what life gives you. And I got to tell you, life gives you shit.
Yeah, life pretty much gives you the sticks. I mean,
you got two? I only get one stick.
Sticks. I mean, like, all these situations that happen that you remember are going to be situations in which bad things are going to happen. You know, when good things happen, you don't have to do anything. You don't need to know stuff to deal with good. You know, the same amount of good will happen that you can bring about. What you have to do, most importantly, is take the bad stuff and make it as less bad as you possibly can.
Who do you want to be? Neville Chamberlain or Winston Churchill?
Funny. I don't know how many people listening know about history that would get the joke.
They'd better. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. We weren't alive, though.
No, we weren't alive, but you know what? I know.
Yeah.
All right, so that wraps up our first themed week, How to Not Suck Week. I'll note that the only reason we picked that theme was because it seemed easy, and we're still recovering from last weekend, so we're kind of tired.
Yeah, and we're sorry if, you know, a week on How Not to Suck sucked, but
Next week is going to be a much better week, we think.
Week is going to be such an awesome week, it'll make up for any suckage of the How Not to Suck week.
Yep, mostly because we're going to get a good night's sleep this weekend.
Yeah, here, let me... How Not to Suck at deciding what to do for the podcast all week? Do what we're going to do next week.
Ha-ha!
I don't know, do you think we should tell people what we're going to do next week?
All right, let's warn them. Of course, that means that we're now locked in, but we're going to do Favorites Week.
On Monday, you'll probably get our favorite technologies.
Yeah, something along those lines.
On Tuesday, we'll probably do our favorite board games and video games and such.
Wednesday is what? Our favorite anime?
Manga and comics, perhaps?
Oh, and maybe Thursdays will be our favorite special topics and other miscellany.
Ooh, who knows what we'll do Thursday? I don't even know yet. So there's still a mystery going on.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcast, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.